Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the organizers for the invitation to be here and for enabling these discussions over the last 2 days. This afternoon, my remarks focus on prospects for the ICC's Office of the Prosecutor, the OTP, to have a positive complementarity effect in its situations under preliminary examination. It's already been said that this is not the main goal of preliminary examinations, but it's a potential peripheral effect. And it's also a topic that's already been the subject of several presentations, I think today and certainly yesterday. And so I'm going to try to make an effort to avoid going over what's already very familiar territory and try to add to what has been said. The immediate context for my presentation is a four-country case study that Human Rights Watch is carrying out and which we intend to publish as a report towards the end of this year. This will be the second report that we've done on the OTP's preliminary examinations. The first report, which we issued in 2011, is somewhat out of date. Although there are certainly persistent themes and challenges, between then and now, there's also considerable more practice to evaluate. On the one hand, that's practice at the OTP itself, which has, as you know, a standing policy commitment to encourage national proceedings where feasible in preliminary examinations. But on the other hand, I also mean increased practice in the broader field of what is loosely referred to and somewhat inaccurately referred to as positive complementarity. So beyond just the role of the ICC or the OTP, what can the international community do to support national justice efforts? That was a topic that was given some new life and new attention at the 2010 ICC Kampala Review Conference. So while our report in 2011 did critique the OTP's practice at that point, in some respects it was really more, or looking backwards, I see it as more theoretical. What kinds of changes in practice, what kinds of mechanisms might the OTP be able to use to amplify its leverage with national authorities? Now, with the benefit of more practice and a deeper understanding of the obstacles and challenges for successful national cases, the idea for this current research project is really to try to understand to what extent is this working? To what extent are the preliminary examinations having an impact on national justice? Can they catalyze national proceedings that would avoid the need for ICC action? So it's a very specific understanding of impact. You could define impact, you could define complementarity on much broader terms. We've taken it at a very narrow level. And if it is working, how? How is it working, and could it work more effectively? It's a topic that we feel is of really profound importance to the success of the fight against impunity. The demands for justice for atrocity crimes far outstrip the capacity of the ICC. The number of situations in which the ICC could and probably should act simultaneously are probably far more than what the court's founders envisioned. And it doesn't seem to us that this situation is likely to improve. There are a multiplication of human rights crises, a disregard for international humanitarian law, and an all too limited appetite on the part of ICC states parties to fund a court that can go beyond a handful of investigations in any given year. So in our view, the OTP's policy commitment to encourage national proceedings as part of the preliminary examinations process is actually just a necessary one. It's a necessary commitment if this system is going to work. And it holds out the potential to address at least some of the capacity gap. But I also want to stress that the prospects for this have to be realistically understood and appraised. It isn't sufficient to hope for this kind of impact, to trade away the political support and the resources that the ICC needs to act when it needs to act as a court of last resort out of an overinflated sense of potential impact. So I hope that our research will also help to put on a more realistic footing what can really be expected from preliminary examinations when it comes to, again, this very specific understanding of impact, progress in national justice that would avoid ICC action. Our four case studies are Colombia, Georgia, which has obviously by now passed into a situation under investigation, Guinea, and the United Kingdom. But I say those only as a bit of a teaser, because in my remarks today, I'm actually not going to focus on our findings in these specific situations. As to each, I can say that we have identified positive, if incremental, steps that are partly attributable to the OTP's engagement, and in some situations, more than that. But we're still adding up our research, trying to really formulate our recommendations. So I don't want to speak to specifics. Instead, I'm going to focus on a few of the cross-cutting dynamics or challenges we've identified, and that we've tried to understand how these dynamics are playing out in these four case studies. And for the findings and for the recommendations, I apologize, but you'll just have to keep an eye out for our report. One last word of backward. You'll notice that each of these case studies concern potential, or in the case of Georgia, actual proprio motu investigations. It seems likely that there are probably different dynamics at play in state or Security Council referrals. So that's one limit of our research. There are other limitations, to be sure, but that's one obvious one I wanted to mention. So I'm going to talk about five cross-cutting dynamics: the importance of context, the OTP as a unique actor, passive versus active effects, the role of strategic alliances, and resources. So the first dynamic, context matters. It's very clear that context will influence the likelihood of successful positive complementarity activities by the OTP. Context here includes the underlying alleged crime base. It includes public demand for accountability, where high public interest provides more fertile ground for the OTP's engagement. The availability of other partners on complementarity, particularly among international donors, and most critically, the posture of national authorities themselves. The OTP can take steps to influence context. In fact, that's really the entire premise of positive complementarity strategies. But there will be objective challenges to its ability to do so. So the OTP, in a sense, really has to take situations as it finds them. That context matters is a very obvious point, of course, but I mention it here because it may have some implications for OTP practice. In fact, one of our criticisms in our 2011 report of the OTP's practice at that time was that there was the appearance of inconsistent treatment between situations. And it was that inconsistent treatment and questions as to why there were missions in one situation and nothing was being heard in other situations, and differences in timeline. Those inconsistencies tended to undermine the OTP's credibility, including with potential positive complementarity partners, and also its leverage with national authorities. So inconsistency is certainly problematic, but when it comes to having an impact on national justice, differences in context are likely going to mean that there may be differences in the OTP's approach. How the OTP can navigate the need for tailored approaches that will probably appear inconsistent may be a very significant challenge to maintain the credibility of the OTP's engagement. And it puts an emphasis, in our view, on issues around transparency and publicity in preliminary examinations. The OTP is a unique actor. There are a number of ways in which the OTP can seek to catalyze national proceedings. Among other steps, it can focus public debate through the media and within civil society on the need for accountability. It can serve as a source of sustained pressure on domestic authorities to show results in domestic proceedings. It can highlight to international partners the importance of including accountability in technical assistance programs and in political dialogue with domestic authorities. And it can equip human rights activists with information derived from its own analysis to help them strengthen their own advocacy around justice. Many of these strategies, apart from perhaps that last one, are shared with other complementarity actors. But among these actors, the OTP is really unique. Its leverage with national authorities stems from the fact that, unlike international donors, unlike civil society actors, unlike Human Rights Watch, it has the authority to open an investigation if national authorities fail to act. But under the court's legal framework and its case law, the OTP's ability to act, at least in Article 15 proprio motu investigations, is not a decision alone for the OTP to make. So it has this really unique source of leverage, but it's not in full control of that leverage, is the point I want to make. The OTP needs to satisfy the court's judges that there are no national proceedings that would render potential cases inadmissible. efforts by the OTP to catalyze national justice, to stimulate national proceedings, can produce domestic activity that will actually make it more difficult for the OTP to meet this burden. Where that activity leads to genuine national proceedings, this is the whole point. This is very positive. But there is an equal risk of domestic authorities producing a certain amount of activity, opening of case files, limited investigative steps to stave off ICC intervention, but without following through to prosecution. This can lead to an indeterminate limbo. Too much domestic activity to be certain on admissibility, but too little domestic activity to close out the preliminary examination in deference to genuine national proceedings. So this unique leverage comes with a unique catch. The OTP needs to strike a balance between opening space for national authorities to act, while at the same time it proceeds and is being seen to proceed with a commitment to act if national authorities ultimately do not. Where delay in ICC action does not result in genuine national justice as a result of opening this space, but instead provides space for national authorities to obstruct ICC action, it undermines, of course, justice, but also the OTP's influence with national authorities, and it risks legitimizing impunity in the view of key partners on complementarity, damaging those partnerships. I think this is really the challenge that you were talking about in your paper. And I think how to navigate this space is perhaps the paramount challenge that the OTP faces. Third dynamic, passive versus active effects. Excuse me. The question here is, to what extent does the OTP need active strategies around preliminary examinations on positive complementarity? Or is it the existence itself of the preliminary examination that is sufficient for impact? The emphasis in our research is on the former. What steps can the OTP take? What missions? What kind of engagement? What kind of public reporting can it take to actively increase its impact? But this is not to overlook the possibility of more passive effects. And the strength of such passive effects, if they do exist, may have some implications for assessing the OTP's current phased approach to preliminary examinations. As you know, the OTP has a four-phased approach, with phase two, an assessment of subject matter jurisdiction and the identification of potential cases, and then phase three, the consideration of the admissibility of these potential cases. The OTP's policy, as it was consolidated in the 2013 preliminary examination policy paper, is to seek to encourage, where feasible, national investigations and prosecutions where potential cases falling within the jurisdiction of the court have been identified, meaning that it will, with the caveat of where feasible, increase its positive approach to complementarity after moving from phase two and the identification of potential cases to phase three. There are a number of advantages to first identifying potential cases before moving to more positive or active strategies on complementarity. But it raised the question for us as to whether there are also opportunity costs, given that there are no timetables, there is uncertainty as to how long phase two can take and when we will see, if we will see, of course, movement to a phase three. To the extent that there are passive effects, even in the absence of active strategies, however, this may provide a greater flexibility and more momentum on complementarity than what appears on its face to be a more rigid division between phase two and phase three suggests. And of our four case studies, this really comes out in the case of the UK, which is still in phase two. And in fact, because of an evolution in the OTP's practice, you can't really think of the other situations as having really a very distinct approach between phase two and phase three. Fourth, strategic alliances and the role of the media. In each of the case studies, we've sought to understand the OTP's engagement with other actors who could have a role to play on positive complementarity. I've already mentioned these positive complementarity actors a few times. They include international partners, civil society, the senders of communications to the OTP, and the media. Given the often steep obstacles to national justice in these sorts of cases, it's likely that the OTP simply cannot go it alone and will have more influence when its efforts are amplified by others. I think the challenge is to understand, can the OTP stimulate these other actors? How can it best engage with these other actors Or will these other actors need to independently and proactively develop their own approaches that take into account the existence of this new creature, the preliminary examination? This comes into play, I think, more specifically in international donors, where timelines and budget cycles mean that there is less flexibility to respond as soon as a preliminary examination is opened or as soon as it moves from phase two to phase three. So is there a need for these potential complementarity partners to develop their own strategies and not need the stimulus provided by the OTP or not need it exclusively? But that's a question. I mentioned the role of the media here. It's not quite the same. I don't think it's quite correct to think of the media as a strategic partner. It has its own important function in society. But there are really important questions about how the OTP uses publicity, when, how, why, and that will be sort of the focus of some separate discussion and findings in our report. And then finally, the fifth dynamic, the OTP's resources. So the situation analysis section has seen a significant boost in resources from the court's earliest years, it has to be said, but it's still very small. It's still less even than what the OTP estimates should be its so-called basic size of 17 staff members. And even with 17 staff members, if we take the OTP's calculations of an average of 9 preliminary examinations per year, that calculates for them into 1.5 full-time analysts for each situation. And these staff members are responsible for a huge range of activities. The analysis itself, again, everything I've been talking about is at the periphery, at best, of preliminary examination. It's not even the main point. So the analysis itself, public information, efforts to deter crimes, encourage national proceedings, along with the field missions, the consultations, and all the other activities to support these functions. Clearly, particularly in preliminary examinations with widespread allegations of crimes, extending crime base that extends over a large temporal period, ongoing conflict, conflicts evolving, or significant national proceedings underway that have to be evaluated, the OTP's resources are highly limited compared to the quantity of needed analysis, let alone the steps that may be necessary for these more active strategies on positive complementarity. And these resources are also limited as compared to the diplomatic resources that some governments are likely to allocate to engage with the OTP. In our case studies, I can say that there's a real range of engagement that the OTP has had across those four situations. And you can certainly see that the more intense engagement by the OTP, so the more intense resource investment, there is seemingly more of a correlation with domestic justice efforts. I'm not saying that it's sufficient, but it seems to be necessary. So I think these limited resources should really give quite a lot of pause in considering what strategies the OTP can reasonably be expected to pursue on positive complementarity, which again is just one part of its overall preliminary examination practice. I'm going to stop there, and I'll just say, I realize it's not a very satisfying presentation. I've highlighted these dynamics, but I haven't been able to say very much about the strategies that exist to address them. And I just want to say, I don't mean to suggest that the OTP isn't aware of these strategies, of these dynamics, or that it doesn't have strategies. Indeed, it really does, and our report is about evaluating those strategies and trying to contribute to improving those strategies and having a stronger practice. A practice that is also better understood, frankly, by ICC states parties and other stakeholders. And at the end of the day, I just wanted to conclude by saying again that this has to be a practice that is grounded in a reality about what can be reasonably expected. Even as practice strengthens, I think it may well be the case that many preliminary examinations will need to result in ICC investigations. This raises a very clear capacity challenge for the ICC, one that we will continue to press ICC states parties to address in their decisions on the budget. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.